Connect the Dots with Allison Rose Levy, Saturdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a Huffington Post blogger and a health journalist and green journalist for over 20 years, and it's my pleasure to bring you Connect the Dots, which connects the dots between our personal health and our total health environment. So every week on Connect the Dots, we discuss different aspects of all the different things that together make up our seamless interaction with our larger world, our own personal health, and life on Earth. Today I have a terrific guest and program for you, and as we do every week, I begin with some causes and political actions and activist opportunities for you. For over 20 years that I've covered integrative health, I've emphasized and taught and informed people about ways to personally maintain their personal health, and at the same time, it's equally important, just as we eat healthy food, exercise, you know, try to address stress and deal with all of the things that we face in life, it's equally important to take active steps in our community, in our society, and to protect the earth. So that's why with every show, I begin with activist opportunities for you. Recently, we had the Occupy the Courts, which is featured on last week's program, and that was just this last Friday. It's a terrific effort. If you want to know more about it, go to Move to Amend. That's an ongoing effort to get money out of politics so that we can make some of these important changes that need to be made in the priorities and choices and decisions we make as a society. This week, I also have another piece of positive good news to announce of the the excellent results that come about from organized citizen activism. Our friends at Water Defense, which was co-founded by actor Mark Ruffalo to protect water supplies nationwide and internationally, had a campaign about a month or two back to bring water to Dimmick, Pennsylvania, a place that had basically lost their water supply 3 years ago due to toxicity from fracking chemicals. When some things went wrong, it happens often. Their water had been replaced, sort of trucked in big water buffaloes for a couple of years by the offending companies, but the state of Pennsylvania would not continue to either supply them with water and build the pipelines that were promised in their contracts, or to urge the company to just keep trucking it in. So as of a couple of months, they were without water completely. Water Defense and several other organizations joined forces to actually truck water into Dimmick, PA. And now, thankfully, the Environmental Protection Agency, the federal agency, has superseded the local Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, which kind of fell down on the job, and they are now bringing water to Dimmick. So this is a major victory, and I want to thank everyone who participated through going to waterdefense.org, which you can continue to support and follow their actions, as well as through following all of their events and actions and that of other groups through my e-zine, The Health Outlook, which you can get by signing up at my website, healthjournalistblog.org, and that's entirely free. This week we have coming up in the future another action that you can support, and I just want to draw your attention to it. We talk a lot about eating healthy food, and that's why it's so important to preserve the healthy food and support the farmers who grow it. And due to industry pressures, frequently large companies, large agribusinesses have more of a say and more impact on our legislators and our regulators than we the people do. A current action by Food Democracy Now, which is at fooddemocracynow.org, is supporting family farmers in a court battle that they have against the company Monsanto, who basically is trying to kind of promulgate their genetically modified seed and penalize farmers when that seed gets carried by the wind onto their land, you know, they're really tolerance of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and allowing that seed to promulgate really threatens organic food everywhere. And there's increasing evidence that genetically modified foods and seeds have health impacts that really were not properly studied for and that we're just finding out about. So on January 3rd in New York City, there's going to be a very exciting gathering. Family farmers all over the nation are coming together here in New York to support the court case that's coming up in New York court to protect them from being sued by Monsanto. This is the kind of the ultimate in preventive medicine. They are protecting themselves. And, of course, Monsanto has done this in the past, so it's not just, it's not something they're imagining or anything like that. So they're filing this court suit so that they cannot be sued. And they're really challenging the right to patent seeds and claim genetic trespass, which has been the Monsanto industrial strategy to control, to kind of promulgate their seeds and prevent others from growing healthier crops. So you can go to fooddemocracynow.org in order to join the farmers who grow our healthy foods in their battle to preserve their healthy farming and our healthy food. And that will be on January 31st in New York. Go to fooddemocracynow.org. And I'm hoping to have some of the leaders on the connect the dots in the future as well. So now we'll switch gears and go to today's interview and guest. I'm so excited about this. We're going to be talking with Linda Bark, PhD and RN. Very interesting combination. You know, we think about mind-body, and there you have it, PhD mind, RN, nurse, body. Linda Bark, a longstanding holistic health practitioner, coach, master coach, trainer of health coaches, is on the show as my special guest today, highlighting her wonderful new book. It's a real handbook for both techniques for self-healing, for coaching others, for learning to be a coach, and it's called The Wisdom of the Whole, Coaching for Joy, Health, and Success. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Linda.
Well, thank you, Allison. It's great to be here today.
It's great to have you. You know, very rarely do I highlight, as my listeners know, even though I have a long background in studying a whole range of health modalities that I incorporate into both my journalism and my own coaching practice that I do privately with individuals and with organizations. But I don't very frequently highlight healing form because I began doing it 25 years ago and have studied and promoted countless different methodologies, but I feel a lot of people have picked up the baton and are now disseminating all of that and doing a really terrific job, and that's one of the reasons that I've moved on to really look at the synergies between, you know, what comes to us and what we interact with in the environment and the state of our own personal health and the state of our communities and society. The thing that I really love about your book, The Wisdom of the Whole, is that it's a synergistic approach to healing. So this is not like, in effect, it's like what commercially you call one-stop shopping. It's not just one technique that you've mastered, but you too have been, practicing and offering and working with people using a wide range of modalities, and they're all here and kind of integrated in a package that makes sense. And this is what you do in your practice, and this is what this book reflects. And I know this because I have worked and studied with you. So, therefore, we're doing something special on today's show, which is showing a kind of new model of synergistic healthcare. So, Linda, tell me, what is coaching, and why? What does it offer people, and why would people undertake it?
Okay, Allison. Well, coaching is a model that started in about the 60s in this country, and it really came because there were new times which needed to generate new ideas and new approaches and really new professions. So that's when coaching started. And it has four aspects. One is a partnership. It's different from what we have had and what we still have in some cases, which, again, coaching is not for everything, for everyone, and it is a new model. So it is different from the dependent on expert paradigm. It is different than following other people's instructions. So it is this partnership among between two people or between more than two people, because, as you said, coaching can be done in groups and with organizations, so it's not limited just to one-to-one interaction. So it's based on this partnership and also a learning and growth model. So the foundation is that the client, whoever that is or however many people that is unique and whole, intelligent and a problem solver, capable of focus and follow through, imaginative and creative, acting from their own sense of order and organizing principles, willing to be a learner, competent, strong, talented, and brave. So this is a very interesting foundation and feels quite different than the foundation that we had earlier and still have in some situations, where the person is seen as a follower, and if they're not following correctly, they're seen as non-compliant.
Mm-hmm.
It is also based on an inner voice. Sometimes people don't know their inner voice, so part of what I do as a coach is help them find it. Some people have it but don't follow it, so there's all stages of development to find this inner voice. And then the last thing is really exploring the unknown. And as you said, part of what I think is exciting and I know works from my 50 years of working in this field is that this holistic integral approach really works. People move faster and they move more authentically because they're really checking in with more of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you say move, you mean move in the direction, however they define that direction, as being the one that they want to go in, whether it's improving their health, their work life, things in their habitual patterns, relationships. It's kind of the full gamut.
Exactly. Yes, this is something about, you know, this is different, that the client really chooses the direction they go and what they want to work on each session.
And that can change from session to session as well.
It can. And often, even though, like I was working with a client the other day, and even though there was kind of a different subject, there was still an underlying theme of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So often there is the big picture. I talk about the big picture and the little picture. You know, it might be clearing your desk might be the little picture. The big picture might be more about looking at organization in terms of the client's life in general.
Mm-hmm. So there are certain there are themes, and they can be addressed on multiple levels.
Right. Exactly.
So you have also watched the evolution, before we get sort of more in depth into your very unique and powerful coaching model, you have watched the whole evolution of coaching because you've been involved with it for some time. What do you see as, you know, I remember I underwent your terrific training program, I think it's about a dozen years ago now.
Yeah.
And at the time, I remember shortly thereafter being in a conversation with Dr. Mehmet Oz, for example, and he was kind of, what can you tell me about coaching? This is an interesting new thing. What do you know about it? And I think I described your program to him. And of course, now everyone is starting coaching programs everywhere. So, you know, what have you seen about the evolution and what should people you know, best look for in a coach?
Well, that's a great question, Allison. Yes, it has really evolved. I mean, in the early 90s, I I learned about coaching. I had and at that time I called myself a health coach, and then people had they thought they had to be sick to come to me, and then so I called myself a wellness coach, and then they just wanted to work on exercise or nutrition. So then I called myself a transition coach, which really was a great title because I work with people who are moving in any area of their life. As you said, it could be about career, relationships, work-life balance, sense of purpose, health challenges. So using that model of transition really worked. And in the early 90s, people didn't know what a coach was at all. They thought it meant, especially if it was a man, they thought it was about, you know, the kind of experience they had in the locker room when they were in high school and, you know, rah, 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 do this, do that. So that's not at all what coaching is. And so now in the 90s, it was kind of becoming more known. And certainly now in this decade, it's quite hot. It's quite hot for various reasons. One is that people like to be empowered. This whole model really empowers people. And so I want my clients to leave feeling like, wow, I can do this versus my coach can do this. And I need my coach mm-hmm. to do this. So that's part of what has really driven this move toward coaching versus other options. And in terms of health coaching, which is one kind of coaching, I mean, there's business coaching, there's executive coaching, there's life coaching. You know, there's someone I know that specializes in coaching only geniuses. So there's about every niche you could imagine in coaching now. But health coaching is really coming up to the forefront because health coaching has been named in Obama's new health care reform bill. So there's a lot of work nationally. I'm on two committees, one with nursing and one with, it's called the National Consortium for Certification of Wellness, Health and Wellness Coaches, and we're soon to get a website up, working with people from Duke and Harvard and University of Minneapolis and CIIS and JFK and Vanderbilt and various, there's about 12 of us who are on the leadership committee, but it's a group of about 70 people that are really looking at how to set standards and certification because, as we know, anyone can call themselves a coach, anybody can call themselves a health coach, anybody can call themselves a executive coach. So there is certification on the horizon. There's the International Coach Federation is one of the largest groups that has put together since 1995 a certification process with three levels of certification. So now those of us in the health field are really wanting to do something similar. ICF does not specialize. They certify general coaches. They don't specialize in certification.
So, in other words, for people who may want to become a coach, as well as for people who may benefit from coaching, this is professional. It's becoming more professionalized, and there'll be more opportunity for training and practice as well. What should people look for in a coach?
Well, I think one of the most important things is how does it really feel? I mean, a lot of coaches give free sessions. I always give free sessions. I love to do it. And it's freely given. If people continue, it's great. And if people don't, it's great, too, because I get the experience. And one more person finds out about this kind of coaching. So often coaches will give a free session. And if I'm looking for a coach, I want to feel that empowerment. I want to feel that my coach really does support me, respect me, works with me in a way that I feel empowered, that I find things that I haven't thought of before. I'm looking to feel that shift, like, oh, yeah, that kind of V8, you know, like I could have a V8, like, wow, I never thought of it that way, or, gee, that's an option that never occurred to me. So I'm really looking for someone to support me exploring areas that are maybe blind or I haven't seen, that support my inner voice, that really come from a learning and growth model, that, you know, that's not interacting me with in a way that I feel wrong, mm-hmm. or I haven't done it right. I mean, that a learning model is really about, oh, okay, so you didn't do that. Let's find out more about why you didn't, and let's see what we can learn here. Mm-hmm. And that partnership. So I think one of the first things is to really feel the interaction and to see if it feels like those are elements that are being supported. And certification is very important. I feel like and the research in terms of ICF has done some research looking at what clients are looking for in terms of coaching. And the latest is that 52% of the clients they surveyed were looking for coaches that were certified.
Mm-hmm.
So certification is important. And then if there's any way to find out, you know, how long the person's been working as a coach,
mm-hmm.
that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. So basically what you're saying is that people can coaching, they can define, you know, what they want the help for. So the chances are, however you define it, there may be someone who either has that specialty or can, you know, kind of work with that if they are a well-trained and practiced coach. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about your coaching model, because it is rather a unique one. You know, frequently, you know, one of the things that that happens in integrative health practice of all stripes is that if one is a nutritionist, then the problem is diet. If one is a homeopath, then that is the choice of treatment. If you're into yoga, that would be the thing to do. And so, you know, people offer what they have, and in the hands of a gifted person, of course, one can go far in many of these different modalities, and many indeed have been studied and shown by science, for those who like that kind of verification, to be, you know, specifically useful for specific kinds of things. What's really unique, I think, about your coaching model, and this is something that listeners can pick up through getting hold of your book, The Wisdom of the Whole, is that you have a very structured but flexible model that integrates both a range of modalities, but it does so through integrating a range of different models of human development. Do you want to talk a little bit about that structure and where it came from?
Sure. It was a matter of necessity, because in the 90s, I was in private practice as a nurse since 1970, and I worked as a psychotherapy nurse. And during that period, I realized I loved working more and more with people who were in transition, who were making changes. I was very curious about, well, why does someone change, and why don't they change, and what's the change process like? So I have a master's in life transition counseling that I got in the 80s. And then the 90s, I really learned about coaching, and I went, oh, well, this is what I do. This is really feels familiar to me, that I was really aware of empowering people. But I really still didn't understand the non-expert model. So I got coach-specific training, and from that, I really felt like coaching was for me, and I was very excited. During the 90s, I was also involved in graduate school at California Institute of Integral Studies, and I realized that what my life calling seemed to be was to put together holistic healing centers, because in 93, David Eisenberg came out with that landmark study saying, talking about how much money people were paying out of pocket for complementary and alternative services. So at that time, there was quite a feeding frenzy, as you remember, where everyone wanted, all hospitals, lots of people wanted a holistic center. And I kind of looked back on one side where I had all this conventional training in medicine and healing and nursing, and then on this other side, by then I'd had quite a bit of training in alternative and complementary work. So it felt like a perfect place for me to work, and I'd had a lot of organizational development skills. So I really started working to create these holistic integral centers. But what I ran up against was that in my model, I really needed someone who had been doing what I had been doing. And I couldn't find holistic integral coaches at that point. And certainly, so I decided I need to train them. And because they were in different areas of the country, I started training coaches over the phone.
Yeah, and what is, just walk people through the five structures of consciousness model that you use. Because I think, you know, I think it's rather unique and different. Like, not so much how I know that you got there through the work of a philosopher called John Gebser, but what are the, you know, the five different models that are really the major structures of your toolkit? Because I think that's kind of novel, and people won't have heard of that before.
Okay, yeah, because what I found is I did everything, and I couldn't just say to students, do it all. So I needed a conceptual framework, because what I found was having this multidimensional approach and these different windows to look in at a situation, really, that's what worked, and that's what helped people move faster and more authentically. So Gene Gebser was a person that I worked with. His philosophy, Daniels and I kind of came up with this, and then I worked with it more in coaching. So it has five different structures of consciousness, which might sound a little off-putting, but basically, there are things that we are somewhat familiar with. So the first is archaic. It's called archaic not because it was so out of date or before, but it's really one of the basis where, if you think about in the beginning of human development, there was really not a lot of separation between self and the creative force, however a person or the listeners want to think about that. And then so from that, there's various coaching tools that arise, so we can talk more about that later. Do you want me to go into...
No, let's just get the overview.
Yeah, okay,
first.
The overview.
Yeah, it's going to be helpful.
Okay, so
yeah.
There's this...
And also, we're going to come up on a break in about five, so, you know, we can just get the overview and then go into details after the break a bit.
Okay, great. So the archaic, and this is a development that we as humans still go through, just like we have parts of our brain that developed earlier and later. We have this human development that we have. So the archaic could be thought of as times when the fetus is inside the mother and there isn't much separation. So then the next mutation, as Gene Gebser calls it, is the intuitive, or the magical. In his model, it's called the magical, and think of, you know, two-year-old or three-year-old or four-year-old where they believe in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. So there's this magical thinking, and there are definitely tools that come out that can be used in coaching based on that structure of consciousness. And then the mythical has to do with a little more separation in consciousness, where people started thinking, oh, well, there is a, you know, it's not just about the tribe, which is the magical. It's about tribe, no really understanding of a personal ego. So that next structure of consciousness then is more mythical. It had to do with the gods and goddesses and a separation between earth and the heavens. So there's a little more separation. And in this structure of consciousness, there was more about story and more verbalization. And then the next big mutation was to the mental, which we are all very familiar with, the logical, sequential, looking at the small things, the smallest pieces, like really going down, getting very specific and understanding the details. And of course, now we are, according to Gebser, and certainly a lot of people, moving into the integral, where it's a way to incorporate, to not throw these things away, just like we wouldn't throw parts of our brain away because certainly we couldn't even breathe then. So, again, it's about including and expanding. So mm-hmm. it's about including these different ways of operating. So it might be, in terms of coaching, like using archaic is really about presence. So it might be really about being with that person, really building that partnership. The intuitive magical might be using a magic wand. Takes people out of their ordinary way of thinking. The mythical might be a story about how they think of their success or a project. And the mental might be getting very clear about a timeline, the next step. So the integral is how to really come from all these places.
And kind of have that work. And so this also, I think, gets into what I talked about in introducing you, which is the concept of synergy, which is, that we can use these various parts of ourselves in this model without having, to seamlessly integrate and perfect them. There's
exactly.
kind of a synergistic effect when we just harness them. So it's like we don't have to wait till the magic day when it's all perfectly integrated. In fact, understanding and working with these different dimensions and getting them all kind of going in different ways is actually a way to create that kind of movement and integration. And I think that's what's so terrific about this model. Well, we'll talk more about this after our break for station identification, which is coming up momentarily. I'm Allison Rose Levy on Connect the Dots, and today we're speaking with Linda Bark, the author of The Wisdom of the Whole, Coaching for Joy, Health, and Success. Stay with us for the second half of the show. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I'm here with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Today's show, I'm talking with Linda Bark, the author of The Wisdom of the Whole, and we're talking about her unique model of coaching and her wonderful new book, which is really a great resource for both working with yourself, if you're knowledgeable about these modalities and feel comfortable, and also something that you can access through coaching to get the support, encouragement, and empowerment of working in partnership, which is the model that Linda has developed in her many decades of working as a practitioner and as a coach. So we're talking about that today. People interested in learning more should go to Linda's website, barkcoaching.com, and you can also find the book there and order it there. It's hot off the presses, and it's actually a kind of like a big, friendly, filled with information and great illustrations and stories. It's like a manual. So I actually feel that just even reading the book, people would get a lot of creative ideas from it. And it also has various coaches chiming in as well, because people use this model, which we'll discuss more here in the second half of our program, in a variety of different ways. Linda, in the first half of the show, we were talking about the five sort of structures of the model, different levels of consciousness. This is an evolutionary model, as you described. It goes from one to the next to the next. Can you highlight for our listeners how that works, how people can use the model, and coaches can use the model to work on the kinds of things that people want to move forward on that they bring to coaching?
Sure, Allison, I'd love to. So as I said earlier, the first structure of consciousness was the archaic, which is kind of we can think of our own development when we're kind of in the uterus, the the fetus in the uterus close to the source. So part of the tools that I really think about in terms of that is really helping people, helping clients, can, if they want to, again, this is always, you know, driven by the client, but it's meditation, contemplation, prayer, being in the present, sense of purpose, compassion, looking at Wilbur's Three Faces of God, whether, you know, it's first person, like I am the God, or, you know, God, I use God as a very broad term. It can be goddess, it could be anything else that people call the creative spirit or the creative source. So the second being, you know, outside of me, mm-hmm. and the third being, it's everywhere. The source, the creation is everywhere. So sometimes people just understanding how they think about this is very helpful. What works for them, what they want to develop. So that archaic structure has some tools in coaching that I find very useful. And then the intuitive or magic has to do with intuition, silence, the magic wand, and looking at energy in the body. Not that I am an acupuncturist, but sometimes people have a sense of where their energy is, how it changes. And as you said, this is a model. As I said earlier, when I decided that I wanted to teach, I needed to think, well, gosh, what do I do? And when I realized I pulled in so much from all different kinds of disciplines and modalities, I really needed a conceptual model that everything could fit into. So it might be tapping, you know, a process where people can move their own energy. It might be spending time in nature. It might be having to do with what nourishment comes in, keeping a food, mood, and nourishment journal. It might be about ritual. These are all things, certainly nature in this intuitive, magical structure of consciousness long ago was really part of what was happening. It was about the tribe. It was not about a single self-ego. And mm-hmm. as I mentioned, it had to do, you know, we still have this where kids are very involved with Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and things like that. And then the mythical, moving again into another mutation, is what Gebser calls it, a structure of consciousness, which was after the magical or the intuitive, where it's about story. And so you know, looking at imagery, dialogue between a part of yourself or, you know, maybe something's happening. When I'm working with a client, maybe something's happening in their throat. It gets tight or it starts, or people start feeling heaviness in their chest. This idea of having a dialogue with some part of themselves is very useful. Again, drawing in things that are unknown at all levels, at a body, mind, spirit level, looking at affirmations, understanding personal constitution, that's something that I also integrate into my coaching work. I'm not an expert Ayurvedic
practitioner.
Person, practitioner, mm-hmm. yeah. But, and I do know some things about personal constitution, and it really helps me see how people experience their life and how they move forward. So if someone's per se is very vata, very air-like, usually having a structure, setting priorities that they are in charge of can be very helpful. And sometimes mm-hmm. there's a little education involved in my work with people, which is different than coaching. Education is when I'm giving... When people are asking me questions, I'm giving answers. Coaching mm-hmm. is when I'm asking questions. Mm-hmm. So often there's a bit of a mix. Mm-hmm. And that mythical when, you know, if we take the individual development a little further, you know, it's the time where 7 and 8-year-olds are putting, or, you know, a little, maybe a little earlier, where where kids really want stories. They're interested in stories, and they start telling them, and, you know, lots of knock-knock jokes and things like that, where they're trying to really understand dialogue and stories. And then the mental, which is about this logical, sequential way of operating. And when something is ending, it's often easy to think that it was bad, you know, so that it helps us move on, you know, like the relationship. Oh, that really didn't work anyway. It helps us kind of move. That job wasn't really that good. It helps us move to the next one. So there's a little bit of giving the mental a bad rap, but in coaching, it's still very important. It's a lot of what most coaching is based on. But it is about looking at learning types and critical thinking and decision making and 1 to 10 scales, choosing between options, prioritizing, you know, to do and to da list. You know, a to da list is after you've done it, to keep track of all the things you've done.
Now, what is that, a to da list?
Yeah, so, you know, we all probably have a to do list, right?
Right.
And so what happens with the to-do list is you cross it off and then you write something new. So for me, speaking from my own experience, I have my to-do list right next to my desk, and I cross things off, and then the next week I put a whole bunch more things on. So I've also put together a to-da list, which came from an idea from one of my colleagues. And it's to keep track. I kind of move them from one list to the other. So, gee, I can look at all the things that I've accomplished last week in working with organizations. I always have encourage people to check their to-da list, even in my own organization. At the end of the month, we kind of go over our to-da list because it really helps us celebrate what's been done.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yep, that makes and we don't think to do that. So there's always this kind of rushing forward movement. Did I get this done? Did I get that done? And then taking a moment to kind of, you know, say, hey, I got that done, and sort of integrate it, actually, and kind of that actually fortifies for the forward step, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and we don't celebrate. I mean, that's one of the things in coaching that coaches can help clients do. Exactly. People just move on to the next thing. And there's lots of things that can be learned, like, wow, how did that, what worked? You know, in that to-da list, how did it get done? What can we learn about what really works in your life?
Yeah, right. Celebrate that so that it actually changes the proportion of you know, of how we look at things. It's like the cup half empty or half full kind of thing, and then that really changes your outlook on whatever remains yet to be done. That's really cool. Listeners, and you too, Linda, will know I'm especially interested in this, given that I've been working on a book, and the book is really moving along, and it's much further toward completion. It's important to remind myself of that rather than, hey, it's not finished yet. And you've just completed a book, so you know that process quite well, and it's actually applies to a whole range of different things. I mean, at the beginning of today's show, I celebrated the fact that we've had several interesting wins in the environmental movement
exactly.
This week, with the president basically nixing the XL Keystone Pipeline. We had Bill McKibben on this show last fall, you know, kind of explaining why that was so important for climate change. We've had many speakers on gas drilling. Now we have EPA and, you know, kind of stepping up and moving in to bring water to an afflicted town in the aftermath of a bad drilling result. So, in fact, there's, you know, a lot of good that yet can be done. And so maybe if on our current to-do list is saving healthy farming, which I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we don't have to feel so overwhelmed, even by community action steps, when we look at some of the wins we've had. I know it's that I feel really heartened. So instead of this sense of, you know, kind of gloom and doom, we can't make any steps in this direction, I think the same things apply. And in fact, that goes back to the Wilbur integral model, where, you know, part of what we work on is the individual inner self, but we also work on our collective participation, on our community. Can you talk a little bit about how all of that fits in?
Yeah.
In terms of the four quadrants and everything, so people maybe can get a basic orientation to that?
Yeah, that's really important, Allison, just what you said, because that's a difference. Like, you know, looking at the ta-da list and seeing, like, the whole picture. The reason my book is called Wisdom of the Whole is because I believe that's really what does work. And so when we're looking at just the to-do, which is, it's part of it, it's not all of it, but when we look at the ta-da, you know, what's been done, then we see the whole picture, and then we feel empowered. See, that's really at the crux of this kind of coaching. Mm-hmm. So using all these different structures and being in this integral perspective where we can use all these different structures. And, yes, yeah, so in terms of Wilbur's model, coming from the subjective I, so in terms of when I'm asking questions to my client, when I'm using powerful questions, which is part of the core competencies, I might ask a question about what is the individual's story. You know, how do they think about themselves? Let's say as an activist, you know, what's the story? That they try real hard and a little bit happens, or do they have a story that's more positive where things come together? And they really make an impact. People have unacknowledged or unknown stories that they hold. And then looking at the plural subjective, you know, how do we as a community who are really wanting to change our world, how do we, what's our story? I mean, if we just use the mythical, if we stay with the mythical, what's our story? How do we work as a community? And then looking at the...
Or what are our myths, for example? You know, we have heroes who come forth and they're slain, which is what happened in the 60s, and then it becomes either dangerous to step forth into the public sector and be a hero, or it becomes too complicated to negotiate and make those compromises, and they don't really work. You know, we need different maybe public models as well, and I think that people like Bill McKibben, for example, I mean, he made a story, I think a beautiful collective story, when everyone held hands around the White House, and guess what? It worked.
Yes.
I mean, he had a circle of people holding hands. I love that image, because actually the whole image of people holding hands in a circle, you know, comes to us all the way from our very earliest socialization in nursery school and kindergarten, and I always love the image, because it's really my sense of how we have to do things, you know, holding hands. And in fact, coaching is kind of a way of getting a skilled person holding your hand. The kind of partnership that you talk about, Linda, is you know, the coach is a partner who holds your hand as you together do something. And, you know, when first you get one link, then more, and pretty soon we're holding hands around the White House and making a major change to protect the stabilization ecologically of the planet, lo and behold. So it's all actually connected, isn't it?
It really is. You know, and if we take this model, that's a great example, Allison. You take the model of, you know, the mythical life, the story that we hold, and the myth that we can look at and say, gee, is this really the myth we want? It's really, you know, the power rests with us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the intuitive structure of consciousness really is about the tribe. And so it's, again, from this integral place, going back as much as we can. I mean, we've been through these models, so we don't go back perfectly because we have been through an evolution. But we can certainly bring the power of these structures to really help us get where we want to go. That's just an excellent example.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we continue with Wilbur's four quadrants, the other on the right side, the individual objective things. So, you know, we see, we can count. These things have happened. And then the plural objective, you know, looking at the organizations, the larger structures that can help move things forward, like your connect the dots, like, you know, the number of people you have on your Facebook page.
Yeah,
you know, organizations
that
really
really great
help.
Group. And I thanks for mentioning that. I want to also invite listeners to friend me on either Connecting the Dots for Health or Allison Rose Levy on Facebook. Yeah, and we announce these shows as well as through the eZine, healthjournalistblog.com. So I also want to make sure just to mention again, since you just threw it to how we connect with each other, which is certainly an important topic. I want to make sure that people can connect with you and your book. So with coachbarking.com or,
barkcoaching.com, right.
That's funny. It's like, it's kind of like a dog image there, right?
Yes, believe me, I've had many jokes about my name over the years. But it's easy to remember.
I don't think I ever did that one. And it's wisdom, the wisdom of the whole. So, you know, we're actually, playing with ways to share the experience of the wisdom of the whole. In a sense, that's kind of, we're coming up with stories about it. We're talking about it intellectually. It's a greater reality. You know, since we are coming, we have a few minutes left till the end of our program here, and I'm glad we did our sort of station announcements here. But, you know, I mean, basically we're playing with ways to put Humpty Dumpty is back together, you know, but we perceive Humpty Dumpty as having broken into a million pieces that need to be reconnected through connecting the dots because of the mental that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The mental finds out about things through looking at parts. We do that in our medicine. We do it in our science. We do it in mental structures to kind of help walk step by step through things so we can kind of count and grasp, and, you know, we're not just swarming around in a kind of overwhelming infinite or whatever. And so it has those uses, but it also has that tendency to disconnect, so we're reconnecting to the truth of connection, really. And we're kind of giving examples of that,
right? You know, if we just think of kind of a medical situation, let's say someone has high blood pressure. Well, first they maybe, start walking, so their blood pressure goes down a few points, and then maybe they look at the stress in their life and do a yoga class, and it goes down a few more, and then they start looking at their connection. Then they, you know, their relationships, it might go down a few more. And then maybe the four things they look at, how much salt they're taking. Suddenly they go down a lot. It may be the blood pressure normalizes. That idea of looking at something from different perspectives, that's what works. I mean, 50 years I've been looking at this, and I know that's what works for people. So this multidimensional approach, this way of looking at, you know, the mental isn't so bad, you know. We have the number, you know, if that example. It's a way to see how things are going. The mythical, the intuitive, the archaic, coming from this integrated place is so powerful.
And I hope that, it truly is, and I also hope that our listeners have kind of gotten a flavor of it as you shape and conceive it through this conversation. We're kind of winding down to our last moments here and connect the dots. So on today's Connect the Dots, through the Wisdom of the Whole by Linda Bark, which you can find at barkcoaching.com.
And Amazon.com is the best way to get the
Amazon.com,
book.
Amazon.com, you can find the book as well, and you can find coach trainings, at barkcoaching.com, as well as New York's upcoming New York book appearance. So thank you, listeners, and that's the Wisdom of the Whole connects the dots. So thank you for being with us, Linda. Thank you, listeners, and please tune in next week, noon Saturday time Eastern, on the Rest of Radio Network for Connect the Dots.